This is The State of Things. I'm Frank Stacio. Today is Transgender Day of Remembrance 2013. It's a day meant to honor transgender people who have lost their lives to violence this past year. Transgender people in the U.S. experience high rates of violence because of their gender expression. And many of those are immigrants who have come to the States to escape persecution in their native countries. Transgender advocates say that immigrants in the U.S. often face excessive policing. And in ICE facilities, many transgender detainees will experience sexual abuse and humiliation. Olga Tomchin is a justice fellow at the Transgender Law Center based in Oakland, California. She helped found an immigration detention project at the center, and she joins us right now. Olga, welcome to the program.
Thank you so much for having me.
Tell us a little bit about where many transgender immigrants are coming from.
So unfortunately, transgender people face extreme rates of violence and persecution all over the world. So I've had clients contact me from as far away as Qatar or Pakistan or Russia. But a lot of the trans immigrants in the U.S. generally come from Central America and Mexico because it's easier to actually get to the U.S.
And are they coming here sort of for all the reasons immigrants come, or is there an attraction to the United States? Is it safer than where they are?
Definitely a major component of every client that I've ever had in terms of them wanting to come here is because they were specifically fleeing violence and persecution, and they felt that they would be safer in the United States and more able to live their lives authentically, and that they would be less likely to end up on this Transgender Day of Remembrance list of murdered trans people.
Is that true, do you think? I mean, is it generally, I mean, not to say safe here, but safer here than some of the places they're coming from?
Yes, it's a complicated question because even in the United States, transgender people, and especially transgender women of color, face really horrific rates of violence and murder and abuse. But here, at least all of the immigrant clients that I've had at least have a perception of it being safer, where they feel that while they still have a high risk of being hurt, their risk of being hurt in their birth countries is much more. For instance, one of my clients who had faced abuse in Mexico basically her entire life, after she immigrated to the U.S., she was once shot in the stomach during a hate crime after a man realized that she was trans after he had hit on her on the street. And after she was deported, she was stabbed in the street 2 hours after she was deported by a group of men yelling homophobic slurs at her. And so even though she had experienced violence in both countries, she still felt that her chances of being harmed were much greater in Mexico and her chances of being protected by society were much greater here. So she felt that the only way that she had a chance of surviving was to come back to the United States.
Is the fear of violence in another country a path to legal immigration in this country in the way that seeking political asylum might be?
Yes, exactly. So asylum covers people who have a well-founded fear of persecution based on a number of categories, whether it's political opinion or religion. So, for instance, I am a refugee from the Soviet Union. My family came here as Jewish refugees. So people can come here, people can get immigration status because they have a fear of persecution based on race. And there's also a bigger category called membership in a particular social group. So that is usually how gay or transgender people can get asylum here, is if they fear that they will be harmed because of their sexual orientation or gender identity.
Is that kind of asylum regularly granted? Are there obstacles to getting that kind of asylum?
Yes. So luckily now the courts and the immigration courts in the United States and the asylum offices recognize that persecution for trans status is protected under asylum laws. However, unfortunately, very few trans people realize that they have these protections because, you know, if your entire life, authority figures have always been a source of rejection and violence when your trans status becomes known. And then when you come here, you still continue to face harassment and discrimination from police, from like government figures. It's not intuitive that you go forward to the government and tell them, I am trans, protect me, and that they actually will. So people often don't find out until years after they've been here that they can actually get protections because of their fear of violence. However, under current immigration law, any asylum seeker must apply within a year of entering the country, or else they're ineligible for asylum. So that creates a dilemma where many people don't realize that they're protected until it's too late and the one-year bar has been in place. So there are waivers to that if there's been some kind of changed circumstance. So, for instance, if a trans person was not out in their home country and once they're here, you know, after they've been here for a couple of years, they start transitioning, then that can lead to a waiver and they can still get asylum, or if there's some sort of extraordinary circumstance that prevents a person from applying. For instance, because so many trans people face extreme levels of violence and trauma in their birth countries, a lot of people have PTSD, and very few people have access to mental health services. So a lot of trans immigrants have untreated PTSD. And with PTSD, one of the main symptoms is trying to avoid any kind of anything that will remind you and trigger memories of the trauma that you have experienced. So with an asylum case, even if it's done in the most sensitive possible way, you're really kind of ripping open all of the wounds that you have.
And I know you've talked about and have expressed some concern about what you consider over-policing of particularly transgender women of color in this country.
Yes, definitely.
Tell us more about that.
So transgender women of color kind of experience racial profiling both for being people of color and for being transgender women. So all over the country, police will often harass transgender women of color and kind of arrest them for sex work, kind of profile them as doing sex work just for being visibly trans women of color outside. And oftentimes what will happen is that the charges will just be immediately dropped, but people will be turned over to ICE. So I've spoken to many trans immigrants who were arrested, thrown into jail. Trans women are almost always housed with the general male population in jails, which obviously has extreme risks for sexual assault, or they're thrown into solitary confinement. So what happens is that people are arrested, thrown in jail, the charges are dropped, but they're just handed over to ICE.
I see. And when you talk about the facilities, too, I mean, solitary confinement might sound better than being in the wrong facility. On the other hand, I guess if you're suffering from PTSD, that's about the worst place you could be.
Exactly. So if you're suffering from PTSD and you already have a lot of trauma, then being basically locked in a small cage for 23 hours a day with no contact with anyone is really, really harmful and really damaging to people. Especially, you know, almost all of these women have a history of extreme violence. And additionally, the difference between immigration detention and criminal incarceration is that immigrants in detention have no right to a lawyer or no right to a free lawyer that's provided to them. So the rates are that something like 86% of people who are in immigration detention do not have lawyers. So, for instance, one of my clients, the one who was stabbed after she was deported, she does not speak English and she does not read or write in any language. So when she ended up in immigration detention, you know, basically locked in a cage for 23 hours a day and having all of her past trauma, she just gave up because she had no idea that she was protected and she would have no ability to represent herself, you know, in a complicated immigration law proceeding. So she did what a lot of detained trans immigrants do, and even though she did have a valid claim to immigration status because of her history of violence, she just gave up and accepted deportation.
What about the conditions in ICE detention for transgender individuals? Are things more challenging?
Yes, things are. It's complicated because now on paper, ICE has all of these really great rules that exist about how trans people should be housed according to their gender identity, and how, like, for instance, trans women shouldn't be strip searched by men, how people should have access to hormones. However, these rules are enforced practically nowhere, absolutely nowhere. So what happens is that trans women are, just like in jails, in immigration detention, they're thrown either into the general male population, where they face extreme rates of harassment and sexual abuse, both from the other detained immigrants and from the prison guards, or they're thrown into solitary, where they're suffering. Oftentimes, they're sexually humiliated kind of for the enjoyment of the prison guards. So trans women will be forced to shower with men, or they'll be forced to, like, strip naked kind of for the amusement of the guards. Very few people are given access to hormones right away. Oftentimes, there's long delays, even though the rules specifically say that if trans people have had hormones before they were in detention, that they have to keep receiving them. And having your hormones taken away has really serious both physiological and psychological effects. So people will start growing facial hair again, their bodies will start changing, and when you already, you know, are suffering from all of your past trauma and being in this very uncertain state of wondering whether you're going to be deported to your death, and you're locked in this cage with no outside help, it's a really horrific, traumatizing experience that leads people to just give up.
I understand, too, that, I mean, you talked about people being able to be put with groups that they identify with, male and female. There are also specific transgender pods in ICE. Is that true?
So, yes. So right now in the Santa Ana Detention Facility in Orange County, there is a GBT pod. So basically it is transgender women and non-transgender gay men who are put together. And ICE kind of touts this as a model facility where they're very proud of them actually affirmatively trying to protect transgender people. However, the facility has huge problems still. For example, there have been a lot of reported cases of transgender women in this pod being disciplined for not using their male voice, whatever that is. So basically, ICE is saying that they are protecting trans people, and then they are punishing trans people for being trans. So obviously that has huge, like, dignitary harms and also contributes to the suffering that people feel because they came to this country thinking that they're going to be safe and protected, and then our government is punishing them for being who they are authentically.
Tell us about your work with immigration detention centers.
Sure. So I have started an immigration detention project at Transgender Law Center. So Transgender Law Center, we are a national legal organization that works on all sorts of issues that impact trans people and discrimination against trans people. So we handle employment discrimination, healthcare access. We've been doing a lot of school safety work lately. And my project is focusing on immigration detention specifically. So my work involves advocacy with ICE on both a federal and local detention facility level. So making sure that ICE has these good policies on paper, but also making sure that these policies are actually implemented in places and that the suffering that people experience is greatly reduced. Another major component of my work is doing Know Your Rights work for the trans immigrant community. So making sure that people know the immigration status that they could qualify for, whether it is asylum, or there's also a visa called the U visa, which is for victims of violent crime who cooperate with the police. So unfortunately, because so many trans people experience, especially trans women of color, experience violence in the United States, a U visa is also a potential means of getting status for them. So my hope is that if people know about ways that they can get immigration status, then they're much less likely to end up in immigration detention.
Yeah, and this is working in communities outside the detention centers. Can you get into the detention center itself? Because you talked about not having access to legal help.
Yes. So there is programs throughout the country called legal orientation programs that are run by nonprofits. So I think they exist currently in about 25 detention facilities. So nonprofits go into these detention facilities and give a know your rights presentation, telling people what the potential ways of fighting deportation are, and also doing interviews with people, trying to find people who have the most compelling cases that are most likely to actually succeed if they get representation, and then trying to set up these people with pro bono representation. So part of my work involves working with these providers of legal orientation programs and with just general immigration practitioners in general, so people who work with detained immigrants, and trying to increase these lawyers' capacity to serve trans immigrants. Because many immigration lawyers really want to be able to serve trans immigrants, but they just don't know how in a culturally competent manner.
Well, how about immigration officials themselves? Are they open to these ideas and solutions to these problems?
Yes. I've definitely been pleasantly surprised with how open ICE has been with me and how willing they are to listen. So it's been interesting because I've had ICE be very enthusiastic about trying to actually change things and improve things, and they've been very good about listening to feedback. It's just a matter of actually implementing the changes that need to be made.
Oh, good.
So it seems that their hearts are willing. It's just they have to actually do the work.
And know what the work should be. So, Olga, thank you very much for making that evident.
And thank you so much for having me.
Olga Thompson is a justice fellow at the Transgender Law Center based in Oakland, California. She founded Immigration Detention Project Center. That's our program for today. You can find out more at stateofthings.org. It's produced by Nicole Campbell, Alex Granados, Laura Lee, and Sean Wen. Bryson Russell is our intern, Robin Copley, our technical director, and Brent Wolf, our news director. This is North Carolina Public Radio. It's a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. I'm Frank Stachow.